Coming up, Michael Nuss, CEO of Epilogger, is here to talk events and how to keep all that data in one place, plus Foursquare's new look and app split for crowdsourcing app development. All that and 23 snaps on the Social Hour next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 64, recorded Monday, June 4th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour in Petaluma, California at Twit World Headquarters. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur at the Canadian Twit headquarters in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Amber. How big is the staff there at Canadian Twit headquarters anyway?
Well, there are a lot of people bawling around. No, not so much. It's just me, Sarah. I am the only one. It's a sad existence up here in the Canadian Twit world headquarters, but I'm happy to be connected with all of you down there. So that's the good news.
There was actually some, I forget the science blog that I read it on, but there was some article that I read this morning about how the myth that telecommuters are less dialed in to work and care less about the work community as a whole is nothing but a myth, actually. So it's like the idea is that if you're a telecommuter, you have so many tools in order to feel like you're part of the group that it matters even less than it ever did to all be in the same room. I'm not sure how much I always agree with that, but certainly for the purposes of our show, it works out pretty well.
Sarah, you're just saying that because we still haven't met. You're just trying to be nice, right?
Well,
we'll meet one day.
That's pretty much it.
It's going to happen.
One day we'll meet. Every once in a while, someone will say, do you and Amber still really not know each other? And I'm like, no, we know each other. We just don't know each other IRL.
Yeah. Like Sarah, I think is probably like 5'11" and no?
Oh, it's true. No, I'm 5'12" actually. Really tall. Yeah.
I saw a picture of you and Tom, so that's where my joke comes from.
Yeah, he actually is really tall, so we look ridiculous standing next to each other, even if I'm, you know, wearing heels. But without further ado, let's bring in our guest for this episode of The Social Hour, the co-founder and CEO of a site called Epilogger that's designed to make sure that as far as events go, you're dialed in, you're sharing with other folks, pictures, blog posts, Twitter posts, and all sorts of other stuff. Michael Nussbacher, otherwise known as Michael Nuss.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for joining us. Now, I've been familiar with Epilogger for a while now, but I've recently had a chance to see it in action, both in Montreal at a conference, but also, unfortunately, in Toronto, we had a shooting recently, and Epilogger was one place that I would go just to see what was happening. It was at a shopping center and all of the latest tweets and updates and everything. So would you be able to describe what Epilogger is, just for people who maybe aren't so familiar with it yet?
Sure. So Epilogger is an experience that basically is the entire event collected from everyone automatically in one central archive. We make it very beautiful and captivating, which also lets you create and consume content. So basically you go to an event and the big question is, where are all the pictures? Where's all the content? And well, it's right here across whatever social network you might use. We find that social networks tend to fragment what's happening at the event. Someone might be on Twitter, someone's on Instagram, someone's on Foursquare. We're all in the same place, but we're not able to find it all in one place. Searching Google doesn't really do the trick. So we just decided to make one central repository that you can interact with either through a web platform or through our upcoming phone platform.
So, for example, at Epilogger, I went ahead and clicked on E3 2012. That's a big one. Happening at least at the time of our recording live in Los Angeles right now. And so I see almost 140,000 tweets and shout outs. Wow. Getting close to about 2,000 photos and videos, both of people and products and that sort of thing. How do you aggregate all of this information? Is it hashtag based?
Hashtag is only the beginning. I mean, we definitely use hashtags because it just happens to be the place or the way people interact with events on Twitter. We know that 93% of people who go to events use Twitter to interact. But we also have an algorithm that actually grabs different ways of doing so. So someone shares from Instagram, it's not a hashtag tweet necessarily, but they might have mentioned, for example, E3 2012 or maybe just E3, and they happen to be in California at the time. So we know that someone from California who was talking about E3 will get that versus just getting a hashtag.
Now, what really struck me when I started to dive into Epilogger and dig around the service a little bit is that why haven't there been other services like this, or have there been that I just forgot about that have maybe died off? Because it seems like such a sensible idea, and yet I can't think of another service that does a really good job of this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when we first started it, we looked around and like I said, no one had really done it. We're like, what a no-brainer. Why the hell isn't this existing already? because we went to different events and conferences and sporting events and concerts, and people would just be doing this, be like having their phones out, just taking pictures of everything. And we're like, cool, now where do we find it all? We'd search Google, and Google doesn't really give priority to the content itself, just where the content is. And we're like, okay, well, let's build it because we need to remember this stuff. So we did. Some people have done it, but for more like different goals of why. So what people do, they will build a specific app for a specific event and sell the event planner on it for all kinds of money. The only issue with that is that when the event ends and people just delete the app because it's having to do specifically with that event. So, for example, I know there's even a South By app. There's a North By app coming up as well. But a South By app, people will use it to find their way around the event, maybe see some of the tweets and stuff, and then people just go delete because the event's over and that's all. They don't want to clutter up their phone. And then there's Epilogger, which is all about the people versus before where it's about the event planner. There's people there. I mean, you want to see what's happening, even though you're in one vicinity of the event, you can see the whole thing from one place, and we just built it to be the central repository for the whole live feed before, during, and after.
And now, is there any limit on who can create an event? I see that, you know, I'm logged in, I can go ahead and add an event. And if I browse past events, yeah, I see Connecticut College Reunion 2012. I mean, that doesn't apply to me, but it applies to everybody who went to that reunion. Is there some sort of a standard on what is an event, or is anything an event?
Anything could be an event, really. I mean, what is life if not a series of events?
Yeah.
Everything you do is an event. So, of course, but the ones that are particularly interesting are the ones that more people go to. Like having me sitting at home and computing on my computer is not an event, even though it technically is. Right. And no one's going to care about that. So that's what whatever other service is for. But if you have gone to an event where many people are at and you've done something there, people are going to care about the content that you create because they were there with you. And it's a common ground versus just like, I ate a sandwich. Nobody cares, but if it's I ate a sandwich at the sandwich eating competition here in Redmond, California, for example, then they care and they want to share your stuff and say, hey, cool, I also ate a sandwich at that thing. And everyone's eating sandwiches all of a sudden. And Epilogger is the sandwich maker in this case.
I'm glad you're using really simple examples for us.
Yeah. Can you tell that I haven't had my lunch yet? So.
You're clearly very hungry, Michael.
I'm starving.
One thing I'm curious about as far as from the standpoint of an event organizer, I mean, this seems like a no-brainer. If you're putting on a big event, then you want to somehow really harness the power of Epilogger. What's the process like to make sure you have the best experience if you're creating an event and want to use something like this? Instead of just letting other people do it, how do you take control of that experience?
Yeah, so we're actually going through a change now. So the Epilogger you see right now as far as event creation is going to be changing very, very, very soon. As far as the experience putting in, it takes about a minute to create an event, and then you can take control of that event if you have an event planner, and you can moderate and put your sponsors on there if it's that kind of event. That's sort of like the main, I hope I answered the question correctly. The main idea, we're coming to a point where we find that the people who go to the event are the people who are in the system the most. It's the event planners, if you think about it, like I do events a lot, and I'm one guy versus the 700 to 800 people who attend my events, and they haven't created the event, but they are creating the content, and that's how they want to interact with Epilogger. Our focus is on them. But knowing that, that if you think about it this way, that if Epilogger is a central place where these eyeballs are at and people are interacting and creating a community, the event planner would say, dude, I have to be there. I have to somehow engage that event and become part of the community because that's where my people are. So I've got to be there. Going forward, event creation will be something that hopefully people can suggest if it's one of those bigger events, and then Epilogger will add it for them. And then, of course, the event creator can claim that event. But also, you know, so that's one of the things we're looking at right now. Right now, anybody can create one. Originally, when we were going to stay with that way of doing it, we would have had I don't know if anyone used Quora here, a very Quora sort of way of vetting it, where if it already exists, so for example, in Quora, if you ask a question in Quora and the question's already been answered, it tells you, okay, you can make your own event, but it's already there, man. And you have to press it like 3 times before it says, okay, we'll create a duplicate answer anyway. And Epilogger was going to be doing that for any duplicate events, but we're finding more sophisticated ways of making it a lot more easy to do.
So for something like South by Southwest 2012, for example, it's another event that's obviously very social. People love to talk about it on social media. So I'm looking at the Epilogger event data. There's a lot of stuff here. Again, over 600,000 tweets and shout outs, 40,000 photos and videos. What is, and you mentioned like there are also apps that you could have for the time that you're at the conference or following the conference, and then it becomes less useful and people end up deleting the app, and it's sort of like all that data just kind of goes away. Who are the people who are going to be going back to the South by Southwest 2012 page and getting more out of this information because it's still online and living here?
We think it's everybody. I mean, so the question you ask actually is part and parcel of the problem created by those apps in general, is that they see it as like a single serving kind of thing. And what they all have trouble doing, you know, as expensive as they are, is creating community around the event. It's the people who go to the event who want to come back. It's also the event planner, of course, and the organizers and the sponsors, everybody who was involved in it for sure. They see a lot of value in that, and that's part of our monetization strategy. But the people who are there, when we first started building Epilogger, we really took a walk around a tree. We look at something like Facebook events, and they're pretty good at getting people to an event. But usually, of course, and all you see is people who can't come. They say, I can't come, and it's awesome, whatever. then after the event, you probably noticed that people love to say they can't go public on the front Facebook page.
It's true.
It's terrible. It annoys the crap out of me. but going forward, and then, of course, during the during part of it, you know, people are using Twitter, and it's not nowhere near the Facebook page. I don't know anybody who submits pictures to Facebook event pages. And I don't think even you guys might not. Maybe you guys do, but I don't know anybody who does that. And then, of course, at least the next question, people afterwards were like, hey, where are the pictures of me with, you know, talking to this guy? Or who was the photographer who took a shot of me, and where the heck is that? And it's not anywhere. And that's where Epilogger steps in for all three to solve that problem three ways. That's the idea.
Now, the first thing I think of, because I talk to a lot of companies who are doing online listening, so they have their own listening tools to pay attention to what's happened if they have events or they're doing some type of promotion, and it really strikes me that Epilogger does some of the same stuff. So do you see yourselves as a consumer-facing tool or as a tool that maybe even an agency managing social would use, or a one-off event tool, or all three or more?
So we built it. We're building it right now to be a consumer tool for people to use. But we're finding, happily so, that people are finding different ways to use Epilogger. So agencies are coming back, and their community managements are saying this is a godsend for them because they get the data or the content first, and they can see it all in one place instead of having to do different ways of getting through it. We've added the ability to actually interact with the event now. The really cool thing is that, and also to answer the question, which I forgot to answer the other one before this one. Why would someone not delete Epilogger from their app, from their phone after the event's over? Well, because there are other events in Epilogger that they tend to come back for, even after that event's over. Let's say I went to the event and I did all my stuff there, and I no longer care about South By. Fine. Two things happen. Epilogger gives you the ability to actually save your favorite memories or the favorite highlights of the event, whether they're your content or someone else's, to a memory box, which is collaborative. So right away, the event lives on between you and people you want to share with. But also going forward, there are other really cool events in Epilogger within the same category or within the same sort of time frame that people just keep coming back for, we found that users tend to just keep checking back. Like they go to an event, and then when the event's on, they keep checking back for new pictures or just wait for the feed to update, either way. And then they come back for, oh, that was really cool. Is there anything else happening? And they start searching our system, or they hit the random event button, and we give them a random event, and they just become part of a community that they otherwise wouldn't be a part of because they had no other way to discover it.
I actually just hit the random event button, and I was taken to eShow Barcelona 2012.
There you go, see? you wouldn't have gone to Barcelona 2012 if you don't hit the random button.
That's, you're right. Now, this happened in March, so I couldn't go until next year, I guess, even if I wanted to. But it does give me a link to the official website. This is a show that I am not familiar with, to my knowledge. But it says it's a professional exhibit for e-commerce, marketing online, hosting, cloud, social media. Okay, that's probably some stuff I'd be interested in. So I can go ahead and hop over there. And the URL is not found. So maybe they didn't pay their bills. Not really sure about that.
Probably not.
But it is, I assume it's a way to kind of make it a little bit fun to discover events that you just didn't know existed.
Yeah, that happens too. We also have, if you go to like, go to one of the events that are up right now, you'll see like the top tweeters and the top pictures. People really love to go to see who the top 10 tweeters are. And then they find out that they're number 3 or number 4. And they start tweeting even more than they already are. Just try to get to number 1. They have these like Twitter boat races that we find tend to happen a lot in the system.
Very cool. All right, last question from me. And I know you've been really busy because this is a startup for you and it's always a lot of work. What are your plans to kind of stay ahead of the curve with the startup? And what I mean by that is Sarah and I see a lot of services come and go and sometimes the timing isn't right, sometimes it is. What is your plan for, say, the next 6 months, a year to kind of keep Epilogger alive and make sure that you make the right moves for the company?
We think the time is right now. I don't think Epilogger could have existed the way it is now, say, even 3 years ago when there was still sort of the social media network war, where there were so many out there that was just impossible to keep track of. But we find that people now tend to engage with events through basically one of five, essentially. And you know which one those are. We're also, we're seeing great growth right now, but we're also, as far as going forward, we're partnering with certain events that are really big and high profile. Who just love what we're doing and they're pushing it for us. For example, North by Northeast is partnering with us right now. This is what you'll see if you're a delegate. You can go to epila.gr/NXNEIE or NXNEI, rather. We have other people coming in. For example, we're doing an International Startup Fest in July. I work on some quite a big few ones coming up, which I can't mention right now, but we're finding that both sides of the coin are really just pushing Epilogger for us, and people just keep using it because they just keep seeing the like you said before, the no-brainer part where this is needed. People want to be in one place to do this, and we're creating certain things, features in our system that are going to keep us on the bleeding edge at any given time.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael, and I've had a lot of fun just poking through events that are happening on Epilogger, and I'm sure it will be a bright future for you and the service. It's very cool.
Well, thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. That's epilogger.com. Michael Nussbacher, also known as Michael Nuss, the CEO and co-founder of Epilogger. And like Amber said, it's a great place to have everything in one place for an event. I mean, who wants to be trudging through Twitter, going through hashtags, Amber? I don't want to.
Oh, I know. Yeah, and it's neat. I mean, and I think we didn't really talk about this with Michael, but it's a nice design, right? When you go to the homepage and you check an event, the design looks great with the number of tweets and all of that statistical information. It's just presented really well. So I think it just makes that whole process that much more appealing to the average user and to an event organizer. Like you mentioned, this is a total win, you know, being able to have something like this. You're not going out and manually collecting some of that data.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we've got a lot more going on this show, but we want to quickly remind you that for a limited time, we recorded the Social Hour live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. I say limited time because in July, we are going to move to our brand new time slot. It will be 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Fridays. The first day, well, you know what, let me pull up my calendar right now because I don't want to get this wrong. We will premiere our first show at the new time slot on Friday, July 13th, which is Friday the 13th, which just feels fitting, you know?
Yes, and why not just
Yeah, we're really going to push the limit. The reason for that is, well, first of all, Amber and I think it's just a better time for us to do the social hour. Although we love doing the social hour every week, Monday has always felt a little bit challenging because first thing Monday morning, you've got sometimes a bit of a lack of stories over the weekend. And then a lot of things come out in the beginning of the week and we think, ah, well, we can talk about it next Monday, but we like things to be as fresh as possible. So Friday feels like the right thing for us. And also you will notice that that's actually the same week that we'll be launching some new shows on the Twit Network and some new time slots. Social Hour isn't the only show that's changing time slots. So some stuff is going to be shifting around, but we think here at Twit that it's all for the better. So you've been warned. But don't worry if you can't watch us live. We love it when you watch live because we love seeing your feedback in chat, seeing your tweets come in, and so on. But if you can't watch us live, it's okay. We are on demand. That's the beauty of our show. Audio and video subscription links for you. If you like to listen to us on the road when you're driving from point A to point B, that's cool too. But of course, we have a video feed as well. And you can find everything at twit.tv/TSH. That is our show page. That's where all of our archives live. That's where you can see any episode that, I don't know, you missed something and you want to go back and make sure that you know what the epilogger URL is and so on. That's at twit.tv/TSH. Subscription links are there as well, so you can subscribe to our show and never miss another episode. And of course, if you have feedback for us, thesocialhour@twit.tv is the place to send it. Okay, Amber, I'm looking at our lineup, and we have quite a bit of news to try to get through in the next half hour or so. But first, we want to thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Ford features something called My Ford Mobile Smartphone App for Electric Vehicles. Do you know what this app does? If you don't, you're going to be pretty wowed. So it's called My Ford Mobile. What you can do is you can take advantage of value charging feature. This is actually powered by Microsoft. So here's how it works. Based on your local utilities participation, let's just say that they are, it'll allow Ford customers, as a customer, you can take advantage of off-peak or reduced rates from your utility without a complicated setup process. Already sounds good, right? Well, you can use go times, so you can precondition your vehicle's temperature before your departure to conserve battery energy. Pretty cool. Sounds like the future. You can monitor charging. You can get alerts. You can find charging stations. You can plan out your drive. This is an app. You can do all the stuff from the app. You can share and learn smart driving tips in forums. You can get social. Hey, it's a social after all, on the My Ford mobile website. Gaming features like leaderboards, achievements, social networking available to drivers of Ford electric and plug-in hybrid vehicles. So this is all not just technology, but a way to be social, to engage with other people who are using this app, who care about smart driving and conservation and yeah, all this good stuff. You can also monitor how far you drive and how much CO2 you save by not using gas. And then you can brag to all of your friends because you will be a better person because of it. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and definitely efficient. 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available for purchase right now. If you want to learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies, there's only so much I can describe to you. Ford does a very good job of laying it all out in a very easy to understand interface at ford.com/technology. If you're interested in anything in the My Ford mobile smartphone app, what it does, how it could relate to you, those gaming aspects of it, because I know some of you just love leaderboards, definitely go to ford.com/technology. Learn more about everything that Ford is offering on its next generation of vehicles. They are technological wizards. That's really the only way to say it. Doing some really great stuff over at Ford, and we thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of our little show. All right, Amber. So even though we're actually recording this a little bit ahead of time, for anybody who is watching our live stream, you know this. If you're watching it after the fact or listening, it doesn't matter as much. But as of the time of our recording, Foursquare has not relaunched its app yet. However, they will this week. So by the time this show airs on our website, it will actually already be out. But we do already have some screenshots of how it's going to change because some of the tech blogs have gotten new versions of the app and have shared it with the rest of us, such as the idea that you can see a kind of a living map of not only where your friends have been and where they are, but certain vendors that people have already been to and are offering specials. That's the nice thing about Foursquare specials is for anybody who uses Foursquare regularly, and Amber, I know you don't use it as much as I do, but the specials do come in handy if it's somewhere that, for example, this is a view of, I guess it's New York City. Yeah, it's New York, in the Soho area, a place called Think Coffee. If I was, actually, I was in New York last weekend, well, 2 weekends ago, I might see this view and say, well, 6 of my friends have been here, and maybe they have some sort of a special, you know, where I could get $1 off of my first latte or something, or maybe $5 off if I became the mayor. That's interesting information for me. Another interesting view that they have is it takes advantage a little bit more of that, like, okay, I'm somewhere, what do I do right now? If I'm in downtown Miami and I'm looking to go clubbing, this is an option that Foursquare would give me. So it's a little bit less of where are all my friends and more of what should I do? Foursquare has so much geolocation data that they have a pretty good sense of what are the kind of nightclubs that a lot of people go to, whether they're my friends or not. So that can certainly come in handy. And that's a little bit of a departure that I think a lot of people don't still equate Foursquare with. And I don't know. What do you think so far, Amber? Does it make you feel like Foursquare is any less creepy?
No, you know what? It's so funny. I think that's just always my own paranoia, but I do think it's interesting. And I think because I'm seeing it used more and more, but the reality is for a lot of places that I go, they still aren't using Foursquare. So I don't see the benefit so much of checking in and using the network. However, I feel like this is kind of the future, and I don't know if it's Foursquare or another service, but the reality is just sort of checking in on unleashing any coupons or discounts. It just makes perfect sense. So I think the design looks good. It looks pretty slick. No criticism of that. And I also was reading in the article that Foursquare now has 20 million users. I had no idea there were that many people using it. It's amazing.
It is. I have to admit that, and I think that Foursquare is, it's time for a little bit of a little bit of sprucing up, I guess. Although I like the service a lot, I've never thought that it was graphically my favorite app. So I like at least the screenshots that I've seen. And of course, later this week, and by the time many of you are watching or listening to the show, you will have the opportunity to have the new app because it's coming out later this week. So you can actually look at it and decide for yourself. And we definitely want to get your feedback on that. But just based on what we know so far, I like the look of it. I definitely
do. Yeah, it looks
good. What I do think, Amber, and this is just the way that I've been using Foursquare, is I still, more often than not, am checking into Foursquare via Path. And the reason for that is that I'm in Path anyway, and I'm saying I'm at the TNT set. We have a set location over on that side of the room that's different than the location on this side of the room for Foursquare. But I'll be in Path and say, here I am. And then I can just choose to say, do you want to send that to Foursquare also? Yeah, why not? Or I do that from Instagram. You know, I've got a picture and it's like, well, where was this picture? Oh, it was at the High Line in New York. Do you want to send to Foursquare? Sure, why not? I don't really open up Foursquare all that much anymore because I realize that a lot of people that I am following on Foursquare are also doing the same thing that I'm doing. So as long as I'm up to date on my Instagram or my Path check-ins, Foursquare isn't giving me too much data that I didn't already know about from my friends. So I think some of those numbers are based on people like me who aren't technically using Foursquare at all. I'm adding data to their, you know, to their database, but I'm not really using their service.
That's interesting. I wonder how that would be a pretty big disadvantage, I guess, to them if they're relying on you to even do things like leave comments or participate. But yeah, like you said, you are leaving, you are contributing because you are having photos and that type of information, right?
Yes, but I'm not necessarily getting all that many pop-ups about, you know, I have it's called the Explore button, you know, where Foursquare is supposed to send you notifications every once in a while if you're maybe walking past a coffee place that has a special 2-for-1 or something like that, you know, or, hey, you've never been to this noodle house, but 10 of your friends have, maybe you'll like it, that sort of thing. Those are all notifications that might be interesting to me, but I have to actually be in the Foursquare interface for that, for those to get to me. The idea is that I have it open and these things are just kind of coming out. I don't really have Foursquare open all that much these days. So I am missing out on a lot of the stuff that they are hoping to monetize off of.
Yeah, I mean, I think it still goes back to the idea of incentive, right? Once I have more incentive to use it and I know that the places where I go on a regular basis are using it, I think that I would start using the Foursquare app a lot more. So if my local grocery store and coffee shop and all those things start integrating Foursquare into their promotions, then for sure I'm going to fire it up. But I've seen that on such a small scale that I just, again, it's hard to find a reason to kind of use it. Although I will say that I have more and more friends who are using Foursquare on a regular basis and having really interesting stories and experiences through using Foursquare. So I feel like there's, you know, a bit of a ripple. So who knows, Sarah, you could convert me by the end of the year.
Well, something that I can't convert you to doing more of is sharing photos on PicPlease. And the reason for that is that PicPlease is shutting down on July 3rd, and not just shutting down, but deleting all of the photo data that people may have contributed up to this point, which, you know, could be a lot. For a while, yeah. PicPlease was the Android version of Instagram, yeah. Because Instagram, yes?
Yeah, I used it all the time.
Did you?
Yeah, PicPlease. Yeah, I did. I mean, I didn't take that many pictures, but I did use it and was definitely... one of their many users, like you said, but it just frustrates me that all these services shut down so quickly. And it feels like it's happening faster and faster these days. You know, it's not like they're around for 4 or 5 years. They're around for, you know, a few months and then they're gone.
Yeah. We talked about that in last week's show, the idea that, hey, in a way, who really cares which social service you use if there are three very similar services? Just pick the one you like that makes the most sense for you. As long as it stays up, as long as the company, you know, still has a heartbeat and you don't have to worry about your data being saved somewhere where then you have to quickly make sure that you get all of it back before it goes away. Now, I think based on the articles that I've read about PicPlease shutting down, we've got a solid month for anybody to pull down the data that they have on PicPlease and make sure that they've backed it up somewhere else. I have seen some angry comments from PicPlease users saying, if I can't download everything in a batch, that's just cruel, you know, because I have 100 photos on PicPlease. I don't know that firsthand because I was never a PicPlease user. That, I mean, if you actually can only download something one at a time and you have a lot of data, like, that would be the most annoying thing in the world. Perhaps they'll roll out some sort of a batch download tool to appease some of these angry people. But I think more than that, it's not so much that it's really, really inconvenient to download your data. It's just that you have faith in a company that, is, you know, it's up and they're on the up and up and it seems like a great service. And I guess it's like a shadow of Instagram type of effect. All of a sudden, it doesn't really make much sense. Sounds like the founder of PicPlease and his team are working on other things. The team is not dissolving completely, but this service, this product is.
That's why I think it makes sense. I know we've talked before on the show. I can't remember the name of the service, but it's something like If This Then That, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And I love using that just for things. For example, when I take an image or a picture with Instagram and I share it, automatically that photo is then sent to me via email so that I can save a copy of it, right? So I think more and more, if we start to use these services that are kind of one-offs and they pop up, I think we need to get smarter and smarter about having a backup for that content if it's important to you. And this is a perfect example of how frustrating it could be for some of the users that depended on that and put a lot of images through it.
Yeah, absolutely. So RIP PicPlease. And again, if you are or were a PicPlease user, you have a month, just under a month. July 3rd is when the whole service goes down. So now is the time to get some of that data back and onto a more stable server of some kind, wherever that may be, or a local hard drive, whatever you want to do. That's the sort of stuff that, like, it really scares me because photos are always the thing that's most important to me. They mean the most. They're the sorts of things you can't recreate. So it's, you know, very, very important to get your data off of PicPlease while you still have the chance. Another service that's, no, it's actually not going away anytime soon.
It's exploding.
Kickstarter. Yeah, it's actually the opposite. Kickstarter is, we talk about Kickstarter pretty regularly because there's just so much going on Kickstarter. So many successful donations and fundraising, and I hope that everybody who watches or listens to The Social Hour knows what Kickstarter is by now, or you haven't really been listening to us. But there was some talk recently about Kickstarter projects that don't end up getting funded completely, and what happens to those, and why can't we search through them? The way the Kickstarter works, of course, is if Amber says, you know, I have a lanyard making a business idea, I need $2,000 to get it off the ground, here's my incentive, you know, if you give me $10, you get a special edition lanyard that's got some gold in it, type of a thing. Because, Amber, you seem like a lanyard maker, so...
I can't believe you picked that example, because I've been thinking about that service.
So. Right, yeah, if the whole tech reporting thing doesn't work out, I think lanyards are definitely your next big thing. But the idea is that if Amber gets to her $2,000 goal, then the project goes forward. And if she doesn't hit it, then everyone gets their money back. So the incentive to help is... it's a good one because I can say, well, you know, if nothing ever happens, my $10 shouldn't go nowhere. I get it back and, you know, I kind of go on with my business. But some projects just don't reach their goal. That's just the way it goes. There are a lot of projects on Kickstarter and they are, they do have to be subjected to the Kickstarter terms, and Kickstarter has to say, okay, we're going to go ahead and feature you. So it can't just be any project, has to sort of adhere to their terms. But what happens to all those projects that don't go anywhere? Yancey Strickler, who's the co-founder of Kickstarter, says, listen, this is not because we're, you know, trying to hide the fact that sometimes projects aren't successful. It's that it would be a poor user experience, because if you go to this Kickstarter page of poor Amber's failed lanyard experiment, there's no action that I can take. You know, I can't decide to get the project up and going again. You know, it might lead to unnecessary criticism from people on the web. Like, that was a terrible idea. See, here's the page that shows that she couldn't raise the money that she wanted because, you know, her idea is nonsense. That sort of thing.
Lanyards,
right.
Lanyards are so 2011.
Then, you know, there is criticism from others who say, well, that's because that's all fine and good, but it's also because Kickstarter doesn't want people to imagine a world where Kickstarter projects aren't successful. You know, they want to be this success story through and through. So if something doesn't work out, it quietly goes away, and then you can't revisit it again. I don't think I have a problem with that, Amber. What do you think?
I don't think that's an issue. I mean, I think it kind of makes sense from Kickstarter's point of view. I have to say that I love their FAQ when they explain why they're doing this. And it's on TechCrunch.com during their article as well. And it says, as we said before, this isn't a marketplace. It's a dog show. You don't want the ugly mutts hanging around when there are plenty of great specimens to peruse. This is crowdsourcing perfected in a way. And there's one thing we know about crowds. It's that they're easily swayed, fickle, and rarely kind. So I think they did a really good job of explaining that in their FAQ. So it makes sense for them. At first, I think maybe when you hear it, it seems as though it's not fair and they shouldn't do that. But the reality is, I think in the interest of both Kickstarter, but also the businesses at large that don't succeed and maybe want to come back again, it makes perfect sense.
I agree. Totally agree. All right, let's move on now to the social tip of the week, making the most of Facebook Insights.
Yeah, so this is kind of cool. If you are a paid donor on Facebook, you know that you have access to this really great collection of stats within Insights. So a free tool where you can find out who's coming to the page, who's sharing content, and all of this great information that will help you with any of your marketing efforts. This is a really great article that I stumbled across on Read Write Web. And basically what it is it's tips to figure out how to make the most of Insights and some things that you can do, how to watch for trends, just some fun stuff. So again, kind of only applies to people who are paid donors, but I know there's probably a lot of them who listen to the show, and these quick tips and tricks will be helpful.
Absolutely. So we'll have that link on our website at twit.tv/TSH for episode 64, which is the episode that we are shooting right now. Okay, on to our spotlight of the week, AppSplit.
AppSplit. So, Sarah, can I just tell you that for a while we talked a lot about a site, different sites that would be kind of like Pinterest, Pinterest clones, I guess we could call them. Now I feel like we've gone into a wave of Kickstarter clones. I don't know if you feel the same way. Every time I turn around, there's some type of service that is about crowdfunding. This is no exception. It's called AppSplit. And the idea being that it's a place where you can go, where you can fund, sell, and develop your app. Doesn't matter what type of platform it is, but again, you can go here and share your idea, put in your goal amount, get supporters, and reach your project goal. So just like we had Pinterest clones for months, now we will have Kickstarter clones, although, again, a really interesting way to get money for something that you're really passionate about, and the good ideas hopefully always rise to the top.
I agree. I like this idea. I can't think of any Kickstarter projects that were app-based, but I know that there were some. There had to have been. That said, it's kind of nice to have a place like AppSplit where developers, where we'd all be apps, where you can say, you know, I'd like to just get a good idea of what developers want to create. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're, you know, they're thinking bigger than something that's a crappy little app. We see a lot of those apps that you can say, well, you know, it's not the greatest app in the world, but maybe this developer had limited time and certainly limited funds to making something nice. So I like the idea of saying, okay, well, I've only got a couple $100 at my disposal, but if I had a few $1,000s, here's my great idea. And then someone like me could say, I want to see you make that app. I'm down to help out a little bit. So it's kind of nice to have a Kickstarter clone that is as specific as something just for app developers.
And it makes sense. I mean, the app marketplace, as you know, is so hot right now. I know with you doing iPad Today, and I do a weekly app show on TV, half hour of just doing apps. And the reality is there's so many apps, and I feel like just when it, I think it's going to slow down a little bit, it explodes. And there's more and more happening on the mobile front as far as digital downloads. And so I think AppSplit is just kind of fitting for 2012 when so many people are focused on the mobile marketplace.
Totally agree. AppSplit.com, AppSplit.com. We'll, of course, have the link in our show notes as well. All right, let's get to an email. This is a little bit, I think we'll feel slightly a little bit navel-gazy, but Amber, I want to hear your answer to Heather Marsh, who asked us both, Amber and Sarah. I know how much you both loathe the email, but I'm nosy by nature and I love to hear personal success stories. And finally mustered up the courage to ask the two of you a question about your career choice. I'm considering making a career change or at least trying something new. And I'd love to hear about where you got to where you are. A little info about Heather. I spent 6 years as a military journalist, public affairs officer, and worked for the government as a public affairs officer leading organization's social media efforts. I'm interested in social media. I love gadgets. I consider myself a word nerd. I love to talk with like-minded individuals. So I've been watching you guys for about a year. I enjoy the show. Constantly find myself wondering what you guys do in your off time and what steps you took to get where you are today. I think probably this is the sort of thing, Amber, that we can talk about every once in a while, you know, as
very
we get
sweet,
new viewers and audience members who kind of say, okay, well, maybe we all have something in common, but why do these two ladies like this so much? What got them to where they are today?
Well, Sarah, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I don't mind going first. I think, Heather, you know, my answer is that I've always been interested in technology. I started to work in television about technology sort of by accident. I was a broadcast major in college. So technology was an interest of mine, but not a focus, because I didn't realize yet that I could merge the two. And when I graduated, I was lucky enough to start producing segments for a show about Silicon Valley technology. And this is in the late 90s, so Silicon Valley technology was a very big deal. There were a lot of startups all over the place. It was very much a bubble before it burst in the year 2000 or so. So that was kind of where I got my chops at a pretty young age with my first full-time job. Once I had that job, I kind of never left the space. I worked in TV for quite a few years and then realized, well, I don't actually have to work for a cable network. I can work for a place like Twit, which is technology in itself. It's almost its own story. So that's me. This is just a topic that is very interesting to me, and I love being online, and I love being social.
Well, I have to laugh because I feel like Sarah, we're almost the same person in the sense that I'm going to tell pretty much the same story. And I never realized it until just now how much our paths are so similar. And it's so fitting that we do a show together. But for me, I majored in broadcast journalism also in school. I also did a minor in online journalism and at the time got really interested in the internet. I moved to San Francisco in 1999 and got a job at Razorfish and was still really passionate about creating online content, and I did stuff with the Webby Awards. I was in San Francisco for a few years, moved back to Canada, and at the time I knew I wanted to do television, and I had this interest in technology, and so I heard about G4 Tech TV and Leo Laporte, and I sort of studied Leo for a while, which is kind of creepy now that I'm explaining it, but I bought all of his books, and I read them all, and I really kind of got to have a sense of, you know, what he was like and what type of content he would like, and I pitched them, I sent an audition tape to them, and got hired on Call for Help. Sarah also having worked for Tech TV, it's just kind of weird that our paths have crossed so much and then have done the same thing ever since. So I guess the big thing for me was that I knew as a journalist in my early days that I needed to have a beat or a passion or interest in something specific. I didn't want to be sort of general assignment reporter for anyone. And then I just really latched on to technology, but more specifically the internet and web trends. And I think that's very similar to Sarah. So we're besties now.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Gosh, it's really weird.
Because I feel it's funny that our paths have been so similar because it also has been a bit of a random path. I mean, I couldn't in my wildest dreams have imagined what we'd be doing now because it didn't even exist when I was in school and, you know, imagining my career one day. But isn't that the way it always is?
So random.
Yeah, it is random. And Heather, and thank you so much for the compliments. We're so glad that you like the show, and hopefully it's given you a little bit of insight into, you know, who we are and how we got here and why we like doing what we're doing. I think the Social Hour has been great for Amber and me because it's very hard to do an hour weekly show about the internet because it's like, it's so broad. How do you focus that down? How do you choose 10 stories even? But we at least try to keep the social angle a common thread throughout all of our stories because that is something that we're passionate about and that I feel like so many people can relate to, whether you're you know, a social media marketer, whether you're just an enthusiast, whether you don't even understand why people like Twitter. I think that hopefully everybody gets something out of each of our shows.
Yeah, definitely. And good luck. I mean, this is such an exciting time, I think, to be able to pursue your passions and your dreams because you have access to so many people through the internet and access to meet whomever you want to meet and connect with them through social services and really reach for your dream job. So it's very exciting, I think, in this day and age.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to our hashtag of the week. What is Graceland25?
Yes, so this is our hashtag of the week. Many of you may know that Paul Simon, the singer, an amazing artist, came out with an album in 1986, 1987 called Graceland. My mom is a huge fan. It's a wonderful, wonderful album to celebrate the 20th anniversary. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I remember this album. But nonetheless, they're having an Instagram travel picks contest using the hashtag Graceland25. So the idea being it's an opportunity for people who are fans of Paul Simon and also of Graceland to be able to share their pictures using that hashtag. So it's a contest, and people want to see the travel photos that people have had that are fans of Paul Simon, and just kind of, I think, fun idea for an artist to do something like this.
Absolutely. I love this. Is Paul Simon on Instagram? I'd love to follow him. I've always been such a big fan of Paul Simon, and I'm like, when I was a kid, I remember we got the, I think my parents might have even bought Graceland on vinyl because we still had a record player that we used pretty regularly. Maybe it was a cassette tape. I'm not sure, but boy, did we listen to the heck out of that album. So I guess it's just whatever you feel would be an inspiring picture to be part of this project. It, obviously, I mean, anybody who listens to the album, it's not so much about Elvis or anything as some people think of Graceland as. It's about all sorts of stuff. but yeah, I'd love to participate in this. And I'd love to follow Paul Simon on Instagram.
We'll find out if he's on there. Maybe someone can go dig around a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. All right, everybody, get ready for Amber's Rad or Fad. But first, I want to remind you that we love hearing from you. Questions, comments, feedback, we'll take it all. TheSocialHour at twit.tv is where you write us. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626, S-O-C-I-A-L. That's our Google voice number. Or you can record a video. You can upload it, and you can send us the link for where it lives somewhere online. And a reminder that on July 13th, the Social Hour will be moving to its new time on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. We're very excited about that. Until then, we're going to be shooting our episodes at all sorts of different times because it's kind of going to be a crazy few weeks coming up.
It's a surprise.
Yeah, it's a surprise. All right, Amber, what's your rad or fad?
All right, so this is kind of fun. You know, we talked a little bit, I believe, on last episode about how some social networks are becoming smaller, more intimate social networks like Path, for example. This is one that fits into that category, and that's our rad or fad for the week. It's called 23 Snaps. The idea behind this is that it's a place where parents can share photos of their children's lives with people who they care about. So normally we have done that on Facebook. I know there are parents like me who shy away from that a little bit and think maybe it's too public of a form, and this provides a good alternative to be able to go in and share your photos in a private place with a select group of people all through the mobile application. So now I will say that I would also be a little bit hesitant because it is new. And like we just talked about before, you don't necessarily want to invest all your energy into using a service that could go away at any time. But I do like this concept that it is much more about private sharing of children's photos, because sometimes I think we've kind of tipped the scale a little bit with that and maybe have been too public with how much we've shared as far as pictures of young kids.
Yeah, I like this idea. I also think that as somebody who does not have any children, some of my friends don't share much. That Amber, you'd be in that category, and other friends share so much that I wish that there was a bit of a filter. Not that I don't like kids, but you know, there's just a threshold. Let's just leave it at that. I like how 23 Snaps is here's what this is for. You know, this is for, you know, you have a kid, you want to watch the kid grow up, you know that there are going to be, you know, friends and family who'd be really, really interested in anything that you have to share. Here's the social network for you. But like you said, is 23 Snaps going to stand the test of time if you invest into it? And it doesn't make more sense than, let's say, a Facebook group where maybe there are just a select few family friends that are added to the group that you're sharing with. So it's a nice private network within Facebook. Is it better than Path, which could be an account, again, for your friends and family, or even an app like Pear, where parents might be able to be sharing pictures of their kids back and forth in more of like a one-on-one kind of connection? It seems like we have a lot of options now, and I wonder, even though this is a great idea, is the whole Facebook for Families thing a gimmick because we already have ways to share this sort of stuff already, or is it better?
Well, I think because it is a mobile application, it's just not so public, right? So that's the thing that really attracts me to it. And I would put it in the category of being kind of rad, knowing that there are probably, you know, this is the process for me, at least with our son, is that what will end up happening is that we'll take pictures often on the iPhone because the camera is so good. And then we'll share them with probably 8 or 10 people in our family and maybe some friends. And that's pretty much it. And that would be brothers and sisters and grandparents, right? And so I see with something like this, the ability to really streamline that process and make it easier within the application. So I do think it is kind of neat and, again, gets it out of the public space a little bit. But who knows how long they'll be around. So I think it's kind of rad if they have a long-term plan in mind as far as sticking around for the long haul. And maybe this is also representative of the way social network is heading, where it is all about these really specific social networks and not so much more about the mass, you know, almost billion member audience. I don't know.
It does seem to really put into focus how much something like Facebook, which can be kind of everything to everyone, is just overwhelming to a lot of people. I think that, you know, anyone who's using 23 Snaps, for example, is like, this just makes more sense for what I want to do. I want to share with a select number of people. I want it to be easy. I like this app interface. This is all I need. I don't need all of the options and the Facebook groups and the events and that sort of thing. It's like Facebook can be a extremely robust tool, but for many people, it's just too much.
Too much. It's really funny because Denim Smith, who is watching the show right now, Sarah, this is why it's so great doing the show live and having this feedback to incorporate. But just a few minutes ago, they had said that they wanted to show us my life map. And I thought, okay, well, we'll contact them after the show and see if it's kind of interesting. But it looks like my life map is in the similar category. It says, it's an everlasting vision of your ever-changing view. My life map is a personal and private storage solution for a family's most meaningful memories. So maybe another solution as far as those private memories within your own family. So this is I would say this is definitely something that we'll see a lot more of as far as protecting those memories.
I think it's rad. I guess I don't know for a fact that it's not a fad, but it's like families are going to continue to want new and novel ways to share pictures and stories and that sort of thing with each other. So I like the idea that we've got services that are out there to try to make it as fun and easy as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Options, right? I mean, I think it's about having options. If you decide that maybe you don't want your ex-boyfriend from high school being able to sniff around and see photos of your family, it's a nice option to be able to make that experience private. Not that I feel that way. I'm just saying.
Of course not.
I'm sure there are others.
Well, yeah, it's like, and then you don't have to worry about like, well, who can see my profile on Facebook? Because that can be pretty confusing. I've pretty much said everything I do on Facebook is public because I don't want to think about it. But then again, that would keep me from sharing certain things that I didn't feel like were right for the ex-boyfriends from high school that are crazy. Hypothetically.
I wasn't going to say anything, Sarah. But since we have similar paths, yes, there could be crazy ex-boyfriends.
On that note, we will leave it at that. That's it for this episode of The Social Hour. Remember, starting July 13th, we will be live on Fridays, our new time, starting Friday, July 13th. Yes, Friday the 13th will be 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Until then, Amber and I are recording a few of our shows at somewhat funny times because we are making room for WWDC, which is happening next Monday, as well as my vacation. So we're going to be banking a few episodes. But don't worry, you won't miss any of them because you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. Make sure that you keep up to date on all of our episodes. And if you subscribe to the show, then you don't even have to worry about that. It will just be delivered to you in a little bow, like a box of chocolates. as soon as we push out a new episode, you will be the first to know.
But no calories.
That's right. But for those who do love to watch the live show, our next live show will be this Friday at... what time is it, Amber? This Friday at...
1 p.m. Pacific, perhaps? Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it does. 10 a.m. The next... Our 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, this Friday, June 8th.
Okay.
Many of you who are listening or watching the show are like, that already happened. And that's true. But for anybody who's watching the live stream right now, this is very complicated stuff. Anybody who's watching live right now, tune in again on Friday morning or Friday afternoon if you're on the East Coast, and you can watch us record another episode of this delightful show.
That's why you need to subscribe.
Here.
It'll just make your life easier because it will appear regular.
Yes. Very true. Until next time, I'll leave it vague. Until next time, we'll see you.
Thanks for watching. See you soon.